Let us first travel back through history of Palais Paphos, focusing on the main portable finds that have come to light, and then allow our mind's eye to roam through the site. The city of Paphos was the seat of the ancient Cypriot kingdom until the 4th century BC, when Cyprus came under the Ptolemies of Egypt, and the administrative centre was relocated to Nea Paphos, situated in the area of the modern city. The kingdom covered a substantial territory in western Cyprus, extending perhaps from the Agamas Peninsula to the hills before Pissouri, and sharing borders with the kingdoms of Kurion to the east and of Marion to the north. Since the late Bronze Age, Paphos had become the urban and administrative centre of that area. The alluvial soil was ideal for the cultivation of grains, which contributed greatly to the economic development, as did the fact that the sanctuary of goddess Aphrodite had turned Palais Paphos into a major religious centre for centuries. In his Theogony, Hesiod says that the goddess rose from the foam of the sea, a few kilometres southwest of Palais Paphos, the present-day village of Kuklia. The same information is transmitted by the 1st century AD Spanish-born Roman geographer Pomponius Mela. Kings of the city inherited the title of the goddess's high priest, a function that carried great influence on the island. This is attested by ancient inscriptions referring to the king of Paphos and priest of Anassa. Anassa, meaning lady or queen, was the traditional cult title of the Paphian Aphrodite. The systematic archaeological excavations that began at the end of the 19th century have revealed that Paphos had a unique and uninterrupted history, which started in the Chalcolithic period, the 3rd millennium BC, and continues to date. Indeed, the archaeological finds prove that the worship of the goddess at the sanctuary continued from 1200 BC through the 4th century AD. There's ample evidence of the worship of an oriental deity, the great goddess of fertility, combining different elements. She was initially associated with Astarte, and then subsequent to the arrival of Achaeans from Greece to the island, she was equated with Aphrodite. The fact that the worship of the goddess in the same site dates back to the Chalcolithic period and continues to the end of the 4th century makes the Palais Paphos sanctuary the longest lasting in the religious tradition of Cyprus. Several sites have yielded numerous Chalcolithic finds, such as tools and pottery shards. Significant votive objects have also been found in the area around the sanctuary, in the Evreti and Asproi cemeteries in the eastern section of the ancient city. Among those finds are picrolite amulets, an unusual bone amulet representing a male form, as well as a fragment of a votive figurine with a rounded head and muscular arms, similar to the votive figurines found in Chirokitia, Sotira and Erimi. The absence of any finds from the early Bronze Age leads to the conclusion that there was no human habitation in the area during that period. However, there was certainly human presence there in the Middle Bronze Age, that's 1900 to 1650 BC, as evidenced by sparse vessels found in graves, mainly white-painted clay pots, such as the bird-like Ascos, now in the UK's Ashmolean Museum. The multitude of finds dating from the late Bronze Age, 1650 to 1050 BC, attests to the intense human activity in the area. Impressive clay prochi, a plaque from an ivory box, an ivory mirror handle. Golden jewellery bears witness to the fact that Palais Paphos was one of the biggest economic and art centres of the island, a city with a thriving craft industry and multifaceted relationships with both the West and the East, as corroborated by the wide spectrum of finds. Almost no traces of habitation from that period have come to light, perhaps because the area was densely populated during the Archaic and Classical times. However, wells and pits filled with storage jars attest to the existence of local workshops producing pottery, fine jewellery and ivory carvings, as well as of copper smelting. There were even iron tools, which first appeared towards the end of the 12th century BC. Imported items found in the area constitute evidence of trade relations with the East, especially Greater Syria and Egypt. The first monumental sacred temenos was erected in the area around 1200 BC, along the standards of Near East open-air sanctuaries. This period is marked by the arrival of the first Achaeans from Greece in Palaepaphos, at the time of the Great Migrations. According to Pausanias, the Temple of Aphrodite was built by Arcadian king Agapenor of Tegea, who was caught in a storm on his return from Troy, and his ship was driven to the shores of Cyprus. Another legend attributes the erection of the sanctuary to Cypriot king Cinyras, father of Adonis, who was renowned for his wealth. Travelling on through time, we see that during the transition to the Iron Age, the city of Palaepaphos presents some peculiar features. Whereas other cities in Cyprus are utterly destroyed and relocated, as was the case of Engomi Salamis, Palaepaphos continues to be uninterruptedly inhabited and retains its privileged position overlooking the coastal plain, as corroborated by funerary finds of the geometric period through the classical period, that's 1050 to 325 BC. Eteandros was the first historically recorded king of Palaepaphos, the biggest urban centre in southwest Cyprus. His name appears with those of other vassal kings in Cyprus on the inscription of the Assyrian king Esarhaddon in 673 to 672 BC. As evidenced by 4th and 5th century coins, the same name was popular with the Cinyrads dynasty. In addition to political power, Paphian kings also held the religious capacity of Aphrodite's high priests. On inscriptions in the Cypriot syllabary, they are referred to as King of Paphos and Priest of Anassa. Paphos and other cities in Cyprus rose against Persian rule during the Ionian Revolt, 499 to 4 BC. A historical fact substantiated by archaeologists. The uprising failed, and the island was conquered by the Persians. Herodotus also makes a succinct reference to the assault, whereas other ancient writers describe Paphian kings of that era from the perspective of the classical stereotype of Eastern luxury, as indulging in luxurious living and fanfare. Nicocles, the last king, founded the city and port of Nea Paphos and established it as the new capital around 320 BC. In the war among the successors, he sided with Ptolemy. However, when the rule of the Ptolemies was finally established on the island in 284 BC, all kingdoms were dismantled and Cyprus became a province of the Ptolemaic Kingdom of Egypt. After the founding of Nea Paphos, the old city was renamed Palaepaphos. It was no longer the regional centre of southwest Cyprus, but it assumed the character of a sacred city. The sanctuary was rebuilt during the Roman period, and many private residences were erected in the area, as attested by the discovery of the House of Leda. Furthermore, the large number of amphora handles with impressed decoration found scattered all over the ancient city bears witness to the uninterrupted trade relationships with the Greek world. The fame and magnificence of the sanctuary of Paphos remained undiminished through time. Even in the 1st century AD, geographer Pomponius Mela includes Palaepaphos in the three major cities of Cyprus, together with Salamis and Nea Paphos. During the Roman period, there's intense building activity in the area. The area to the west and south of modern Kuklia is full of Roman ruins which have not yet been systematically studied. To the west of the sanctuary, a peristyle house has been partly excavated, while rescue excavations have brought to light several private Roman residences, preserving mosaic floors in their interiors. Among those mosaics is the impressive representation of Leda and the swan, on display at the Kuklia Museum. It is evident, therefore, that Palaepaphos retained its aura and considerable wealth through the late Roman period. This was largely due to the sanctuary of Paphian Aphrodite, a renowned religious centre of the Roman world, attracting visitors from the whole empire. During religious festivals, worshippers wreathed with myrtle took part in ritual processions starting from the port of Nea Paphos and terminating at the Palaepaphos temple with the accompaniment of music. Roman emperors, up to and including Septimius Severus, were patrons of the sanctuary. Titus was very impressed by what he saw when, before being proclaimed emperor, he visited Palaepaphos in 69 AD on his way to Syria. The sanctuary of Aphrodite was rebuilt in late 1st or early 2nd century AD. The new Roman complex comprised edifices dating from various periods, without, however, negating the basic character of the court sanctuary. The large-scale medieval interventions in the area do not allow us to estimate with any accuracy when the sanctuary was destroyed, or to what extent the devastating earthquakes that hit Nea Paphos and Kurion contributed to its decline. The last time the sanctuary of Paphos was mentioned in a written record was in the 4th century AD. In the middle of that century, the cult of Aphrodite was still the target of criticism by Christian writers, such as Julius Firmicus Maternus, around 345 to 350 AD. Obviously, the spread of Christianity did not favour the parallel worship of Aphrodite. Consequently, we can reasonably assume that the cult gradually waned until Emperor Theodosius I outlawed all pagan religions in 391 AD. In his Life of St. Hilarion, St. Hieronymus seems to imply that already in late 4th century AD, the temple of Aphrodite lay in ruins. Still, habitation in the city continued until the 7th century AD. Oil lamps with the Chi Rho, XR symbol, or the cross, attest to the existence of Christian population. No evidence of habitation has been found dating from the period beyond that point through the 10th century. It seems, therefore, that Pale Paphos declined into an insignificant community. The setup changes again in the 12th century. Pale Paphos, which had been renamed Pouvouklia, flourishes again mainly thanks to the sugar industry. The manor house with its outbuildings on the site of the sanctuary and the installations for the production of sugar at the Stavros locality must have been erected by the Lusignan kings of Cyprus in the 13th century. The manor was the local administration centre and the headquarters of the royal official who ran the profitable sugarcane plantations and the sugar refinery in the district of Paphos. After 1571, the Frankish Kuvuklia fell into Ottoman hands and was transformed into a storage area for wheat and cotton. Travellers mention the rich crops as well as the silk culture of the area. The village is described as an administrative district of the Paphos province. The Lusignan Manor House was turned into an administration centre of the Kuklia Chiflik and initially belonged to the Sultan, whereas subsequently it was given to Grand Vizier Kibrisli Mehmet Emin Pasha. Later it came under the ownership of his daughter, and since 1951, following negotiations, it belongs to the government. It was restored and now functions as a museum. Signs of decline appear in the 19th century, when travellers describe Kuklia as a nearly abandoned village, inhabited by very few Greek and Turkish families. Villagers have kept alive the memories of the old pagan religion. Until just a few years ago, young mothers used to light candles on a pillar nearby in honour of Panagia Galathariotissa, the virgin who gives milk to mothers. The pillar stood out on the sanctuary site.